super quick introduction to today's bonus episode from the Create Media podcast. So on my recent trip to Dubai, where I was speaking at the MeFit Health and Fitness Summit, I got to catch up with my friend Tom Otten, who's been on my podcast twice, a couple of my favorite episodes. I absolutely love Tom, alongside Marcus, who was on last Monday's podcast episode, two people that have just helped and supported me in so many ways. And the conversations that I get to have with them, either that are recorded from a digital format or just privately, either one-to-one or online, they've just helped me so much grow as a person, my mental strength, my mental toughness, my discipline, my mindset. And today I got to be on Tom's podcast. So this is a three-way podcast. Is that what you call podcast with three people? Three-way podcast? Just doesn't sound right. Anyways, three-way podcast with Tom and Dia. So this is in the Create Media studio. So there's also a video to go along with this one that is on the Create Media YouTube channel, I think. But you can listen to this directly, obviously, through Spotify or through iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. But you can also follow up on the Create Media Instagram channels if you want to check out the video. So we talk all things mindset in today's episode. It's very much a three-way conversation, bouncing back ideas on my new book, The Rewire Your Mindset book, which will be out next week. I'm so fucking excited. I'm so excited. That book will be out next week. Bollocks. I've sweared three times now and I didn't swear at all in this podcast. So this is going to be one of these that I got to put up with no explicit, but fuck it, I'm not re-recording the intro. So yeah, apologies if you're listening to this with children in your car. You know who you are. So today's episode, I do talk about my new book, which is out next week. I'm so excited for that. It's out the 5th of December, Rewire Your Mindset, Own It, Control It, Change It. I am beyond excited to hear how people find that book. So we talked about that. We talked about my Rewire Your Mindset seminar, so where that idea came from. We talked about building mental toughness, identifying your own personal weakness and self-awareness around that so that you can get stronger on whatever area that you're weak in. I'm a big believer in bringing your weakness to competence and doubling down on your strengths, which comes across hopefully in this episode. So talking about the Arctic, talking about ultramarathons, talking about business, talking about health, fitness, mindset, a little bit of everything. So I love this conversation. This is one that I could have done for 3 hours talking to Tom and talking to Dia. So a massive thank you to them and Create Media for organizing and setting this up while I was in Dubai. And I hope you enjoy this episode. If you do, be sure to let me know. Hit me up on Instagram. Let me know. And you can tag the guys, Tom Otten underscore Otten. You can tag, I don't know what Dia's Instagram is. Dia something on Instagram. Sorry, Dia, I've forgotten your surname. And the Create Media podcast are the Create Media Instagram page as well. So enjoy. Guys, welcome back. Slightly different vibe today. Where are we?
People are over here. Yeah,
here. People are here. I don't know. There's so many cameras.
There's so many people everywhere.
There's one over there. The crowd that doesn't exist that's behind that we're pretending there is.
We could import applause.
Slightly different. It is a Wednesday evening. And we are here with Mr. Brian Keane. He's the only person ever to be on this podcast twice.
Oh, amazing. There
twice.
We go.
Twice. We've been on his podcast. He's been on our podcast. A little bit different. So look, great to have Brian on board. Mate, thank you for coming in.
Pleasure's all mine. I'm delighted to be back.
What
on.
Are you doing here in this country?
So I'm in for the MeFit Health and Fitness Summit. So I'm in talking for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then I'm running a full day seminar on Sunday. And then flying home again to Ireland on Monday. So
quick in and out.
Busy couple of days, but looking forward to it.
Awesome, mate. So tell us about the MeFit Pro. Let's have a chat about that first. What's that all about? What's your role there? What are you doing?
So I'm coming in and as the business kind of consultant angle. So I've been doing a lot of business consulting with fitness businesses over the last 18 months or so. So obviously the second podcast I started, the Brian Keane Business Podcast, and off the back of that, Greg and Leo and a few of the other teams from MeFit, off the back of our mutual friend Marcus, I think it was, that recommended, was like, check out Brian. And they needed somebody to come in and talk to personal trainers about using social media to build their business, tips for on the floor as a personal trainer, and actually how to build your business. So on top of other people coming in from the health and fitness sphere, talking about movement and physical fitness and diet, I'm coming in with a kind of a business angle on how to actually run your business and provide a great service to your clients. Okay. So I've got different modules that I'm covering on different days over the next 3 days.
Nice. So, I mean, that's a completely different skill set to what PTs generally have with guys or people, professionals in the health and fitness space that are, let's say, almost artists in a way. If you want to break it down across those different verticals, you need to
bring them the kind of the hat of an entrepreneur, right? Yep. So teaching them the skills to be like, right, well, artistry, I know my skill, but then how do I actually transfer that into a viable business? And those are two very different skill sets, right?
Definitely, definitely. And here's a funny story about your book, which is on Audible as well. I was listening to it halfway through, and then I remember messaging Tom, like, hold on a minute. Brian Keane sounds familiar, but I did connect the dots. I'm like, isn't this the, you know, the Brian Keane?
Yeah, dude, mate.
And no, it was really cool to actually go through that and listen to the mindset behind. You know, and there's a lot of takeaways from that book, which is around the mindset around fitness as well. And there's a second one that's coming out, right?
Yeah, Rewire Your Mindset book is out the 5th of December. So it's kind of, for anyone that again, thank you for reading listen to the audiobook, that mindset section of the Fitness Mindset, my first book. And I was so lucky with that book. You know, it went straight onto the Amazon bestseller list. Nice. It's been 8 consecutive weeks there. It's been 16 weeks total on the bestseller list on Amazon. So it's done very well. It's helped so many people. I'm so grateful for that, for the people that have listened to it and read it and bought it, etc. But the mindset section of that book, just as you said, is what kept coming back to me.
Okay.
Where people were like, look, the fitness section was great and you cleared up and made complicated topics on fitness a lot more digestible, but it's the mindset side that you covered. So I split that book really into two sections. They were really, because it's applicable to everybody.
Of course.
You know, it's funny because you could take that mindset section of the book and replace it with entrepreneurship or replace it with business or replace it with relationships or replace it with whatever, because the mindset is everything. So the new book, Rewire Your Mindset, is built around that. It's a completely fleshed out idea on everything from the first book. Basically, listen to my audience. That's how we talked about this the last time I was on. That's how I wrote the first book. I used blog posts and I used Facebook at the time to write the chapters for that book and see what was connecting with people. And I did something very similar with this book. Amazing. Because of my podcast, the Brian Keane podcast, the kind of growth on that over the last few years. And I took the episodes that I get the most feedback on there, fleshed out those ideas, and then created a new book. So let's hope it helps as many people.
Crowdsourcing, basically, at the end of the day, crowdsourcing the concepts. And let's take a step back a sec. So top line now, you've got the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. How's that? That's your first big play, right?
Yeah.
So that's, you built an outstanding community around that. You've done some amazing work there. You've now leveraged that into a second podcast, which is focused on business. You've got the Fitness Mindset's the first book. Rewire Your Mindset, the second book. Let's go back to the first podcast, the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. How's that performing for you now? That's been how many years now?
That end of 2016. So it's at, I think, 2.4 million downloads now. Nice. Just over 100,000 downloads a month. Wow. It's been growing.
Yeah,
nice. But that's just down to, you've been on it twice. Yeah. You know, that's just been down to having amazing guests and consistency. You know, something we spoke about just before we went on air, being consistent with it, because nobody was really listening in the beginning. And it wasn't until I did episode 50, 60, 70 when people started to come into my ecosystem.
Okay.
And then from episode 100, 150, it just started to explode. You know, it was episode 251 last week.
Okay.
So it just grows being consistent with it. But yeah, that's kind of the flagship that it's the foundation pillar of my business because of the reach that it has. And also you own that. You know, like, as much as I love social media and digital media, you know, you're the slave
very
to
algorithm.
Yeah,
right?
You're reliant on the algorithm change. You know, I got hit with the Snapchat, Facebook change in 2017. But the beauty of a podcast is, for the most
part, you've got your captive audience.
You've got it. You know, it's there. Yeah. Like, no one's taking it away. Yeah. All you do is you shift it to, you know, what I've seen in terms of the trend, and you may have noticed this yourself, the increase in Spotify downloads over the last 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is just, now they're nearly equal to my iTunes downloads, which is, again, not something that I'd expected 12 months ago. So, but
with them buying Anchor and the like, I mean, they're pumping big money into the space, right?
Yeah,
so they can see the direction of the industry, and they're hedging their bets on it. But going back to what you were saying before, and you know, there's influencers and the like that listen to this, and you know, building your house on someone else's property is what you're doing when you're building that community on
a
social.
Platform.
So I mean, you know, we always say, when we're dealing with brands, you know, because as a social media agency, we're dealing with brands in multiple different industries, and often what we're saying is social should be like the net, where you're throwing the content out and you're trying to connect with different people on the different platforms in a way that's native to that platform, to get them to want to find out more about whatever it is that you're either selling or promoting or whatever that might be. And that could be a tourism play, it could be tickets to something, it could be a product that you're selling, it could be more information about yourself if you're an entrepreneur, or you're promoting yourself for whatever end game. So the net should be out through social, but you should be bringing them back to something that you own. Because as you said, like, you know, you bring them back to the podcast, you own that space. You've invested all of this time and effort, and very, very smartly, you've built that community that no one's going to take away from you. In comparison to if on Instagram, as you said, like, everyone freaks out. Everyone that's in that space that's built their entire following on Instagram freaks out every time there's an algorithm change, and all trying to work out how to hack it again. Because they've built their house on someone else's property. So building that website, building that podcast, whatever it might be, so to move people across into something you've got more control on, is a really smart move for people that are trying to build some sort of profile.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it came off the back of 2017 when Snapchat and Facebook changed their algorithm very quickly within a couple of weeks of each other, and they were my two primary platforms at the time.
Yeah.
And I remember just getting this dip in business for 6-8 weeks after, because I'm like, everything I had been doing, my entire business strategy, video strategy, was geared towards Facebook.
Yeah.
My interactive Q&A strategy was towards Snapchat. Mm-hmm. And then click of a finger, both changed overnight. And I'm like, I had way too much in this. As you said, I built my house on somebody else's on their foundation, on their land.
Yeah.
And that was a mistake, but I learned from it. And, I think email list and podcast, depending on what you're better with,
sure,
I prefer to speak than to write. Mm. Ironically, I love writing books, but blog posts, I much prefer to speak my ideas and kind of, again, it depends on the person, but both of those things you can own, your email list and your podcast. And I think it's probably a good tip for a lot of people to bring it back to that, as you mentioned, just so there's something there that if an algorithm changes on Instagram or on whatever platform, TikTok, LinkedIn, whatever your primary platform is, you have a plan B, or alternatively, you have a plan A, and then you just shift your plan B when that change comes, which it will come.
Let's talk about the book a little bit as well, and how the book represents a product of yourself and really placing you as a person of expertise as well. I mean, there's the whole 10,000 rule. You know, if you want to be an expert in something, you've got to spend 10,000 hours doing it or practicing it. And then there's also the other theory is write a book about something and you can be an expert through the research.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very little time that we've kind of spent people with authors. It's time with authors like yourself or people that really spend time to gather the information together and put it into this condensed sort of piece of content. You mentioned that you like to sort of talk on podcasts and stuff like this. The process, take us maybe a little bit through the writing process when it comes to creating a book, you know, from ideation all the way to saying it's ready for publishing. Is there something that you like to follow? I mean, it's super interesting for us because, you know, we don't get to meet people who've gone through that process from A to Z. So how do you start, you know, putting an idea together for a book, and then how does that develop into the final product?
Well, my first book is very similar to the second book in terms of how I went about it. Like, I always believe that there's no point writing a book that somebody else has written, you know, for the lack of a better term. You know, when somebody asks me, you know, what fitness book should I read? I'm like, well, this is a great book for triathlon, or this is a great book for marathon running, or this is a great book for bodybuilding. And people were like, okay, I'm struggling. And what I was seeing with a lot of my clients at the time as a personal trainer and fitness instructor was they knew how to kind of get in shape. They knew that you had to kind of track calories in some shape or form.
Yeah.
Lifting weights was good. Cardio was probably going to help you.
Yeah.
But people were kind of self-sabotage and wouldn't be able to keep it when they got there.
Yeah.
So that was the area that I went into with the fitness mindset. It was, here's the first section of the book, which is how you get in shape.
Yeah.
You know, the nutrition, the training, the sleep, everything along that angle of fitness. And the entire second section is mindset. So the habits, the compound effect, you know, the proper goal setting, finding a why, making sure that you're not self-sabotaging as you go along the journey, and molding those two things together. So the idea for writing the first book was partly scratching my own itch to try and serve my community, because I'm like, this is what they've told me they're struggling with.
From a feedback loop.
From the feedback loop. Similar to what I mentioned on the first episode, that I wrote a lot, that book was twice the length. And I tested to see what connected with people on Facebook blogs at the time. And then I rewrote it and put it into the book. And the new one, The Rewire Your Mindset, is very similar.
Mm.
One of the things I did, because obviously the Facebook algorithm changed and my podcast has grown, I've been able to use that. But I also have my Rewire Your Mindset seminar, which is something that I intentionally designed to try and test ideas for the new book and see what would resonate and connect.
Okay.
So what I did was I created the Rewire Your Mindset seminar and brought in, you know, a few hundred people into a room at each seminar, and I was testing ideas, you know, self-sabotage, expanding on the compound effect, rewiring failure and fear and these things.
Interesting.
And seeing what was connecting with people, and then based on the feedback in the room, because I would ask my audience, I would tell them.
Was it very clear what was working?
Very obvious. Very. It was the same trends, self-sabotage, dealing with negative people, or caring too much about the opinion of others, not understanding how to set small goals and focus on the process and constantly focusing on outcome, thinking failure was a bad thing as opposed to being a feedback mechanism, all of these same trends. So what I did was I took those ideas and I wrote the entire book based on that. Mm. So the Rewire Your Mindset book is built on that philosophy. You know, I've got the four quadrant formula, health, wealth, love, and fulfillment, which is like the anchor on which area connects the most with you. And then it just delves into all those other side issues on, you know, not feeling like you're worthy, imposter syndrome, self-sabotage, compound effect, habits, and focusing on the right things and understanding that you're in control. Like, you know, the subtitle of the book is, you know, own your thinking, you know, own it, control it, change it, effectively being take responsibility. This is in your control. If you're not happy with an area of your life, you can change that, but you have to own it and take responsibility for it. Like something I don't want to say.
One of the biggest issues.
Myself included.
This happened to me and therefore X.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's the issue. It's not taking ownership or...
It's playing the victim
role.
Or
at least taking responsibility for the next stage, right? And that's often the case where people will sit in that victim space because it's, I wouldn't say more comfortable, but it's easier than taking responsibility for what happens next. It's easier to say, I play the victim than it is to say, I need to take responsibility for what happens next because it's my life.
And what's really like amazing is once we are able to rewire our mindset about failure and looking at it instead of it being like such a negative thing, but it's a feedback mechanism, right? It's how can I be different next time for me not to fail?
Yeah.
But it's so hard for us, like it's so easy for us to talk about it, but then when it comes to implementation, because failure is usually, you know, attached with a lot of emotion and a lot of like hurt and a lot
ego.
Of... And ego as well, but like when you've invested time and money, sometimes, you know, people invest like maybe they've left their jobs, maybe they've invested like so much into one thing and they've placed a lot of, let's say, you know, hope on certain things to like to succeed. And then when it fails... They are super consumed with the emotive or the emotional part of it.
Cost fallacy. Yeah.
Exactly. And they kind of like they're blindsided about what's the feedback loop here? What's the lesson learned? And I feel like, you know, it's an amazing skill set to kind of change our mindset about failure and about the things that, you know, the sort of roadblocks for us to achieve the success that we need to achieve.
But I think anyone can change it. Like one of the things I talk about a lot on my podcast is I always connected with my overweight clients that I used to work with, and I was never overweight, but I did have a super weak mindset and I had to develop that completely. So it's one of those things that anybody is like, I can't do that. I'm like, no, that's a story you've told yourself. You need to catch that right now, because things like the failure, like what I have to do for that, and I'm as bad as anyone, like I've made so many bad decisions out of either emotional decisions or ego. And I have to like do a 1 to 10 rational to emotional scale. Yeah. I'm like, okay, this decision I'm making right now, am I being the 10 on the emotional scale or am I being 1 on the rational scale? Because when you can remove yourself kind of objectively from a situation and realize that failure isn't good or bad, you know, it just is, you know, it is what it is. And you can choose to see it in a positive way or you can choose to see it in a negative way. Mm. And I think you can condition your mind to do that. And then it's just habits. You're doing the same thing over and over again. Mm. Ultra marathons and ultra endurance events teach you that, you know, they teach you to focus on the positive.
Because it humbles you.
Yeah.
You have to lose through that process. You have to lose your ego because you're doing something that's pushing you to such extremes that you can't be arrogant enough to think that you will win every time.
Yeah.
Not every training session will go well. Sometimes you'll go out there and it'll slap you around the face and you won't understand why, how, it won't really make sense, but it just humbles you. And then other times you'll perform and you'll win. So that I think through that process of certainly with the ultras that I've found is you have to fail so many times to get anywhere in that space and to become good at it. Mm-hmm. So you lose that ego. So therefore it then allows you to sort of drop the weight that you associate around failure, which is often the issue. Because you say that it's easy to say failure is what it is, but the way that I see it is that the reason people build it up and the reason people have such an issue with it is often because we go back to your previous point as well, is how other people perceive it and how people, they don't want to be seen as failures. And because we've built this up like that person's successful, that person's a failure. And there seems to be this label. Mm. But what you actually find when you scratch below the surface and you actually start spending time with very successful people is that they fail all the time, but they just don't care about it because they keep moving on and they're linear. Their journey is not linear. But over time, they're winning. But they've had all sorts of failures along the way, but they just brush them off, move on. You know, a businessman that you'll sit with, they'll be like, yeah, that one didn't work. Complete disaster. We lost X amount of money.
Just keep going. Yeah.
Here's what it is. On to the next thing.
Yeah. On to the next thing. Yeah. But then, but someone else will think, oh, but what if I do this and I fail? And then my friends and everyone else sees me as a failure.
I think it comes in two different parts. I mean, the ego definitely plays a big role of it, but also like understanding the reason why you're doing something. Mm. And you know, believing if, is this really part of your truth? Is this something that you really want to do? Or is this something that you're getting influenced by because of your surroundings, because it's cool to do it, because, you know, like entrepreneurship is something that everybody's talking about, or running marathons is, you know, I've got two friends now, right? Something like this, you know what I mean? Like,
two better than others here. It's like, oh, dead silence.
I mean, I'd like to try, but
choose your audience. But,
no, but like, it's you know, how much of it? Of course, like, look, I you know, believe with the fitness journeys, there's a desire in all of us to be better. There's a desire in all of us to enhance ourselves. But there's always this like fire that burns within us, and understanding why is this fire burning? Is it because I just want to look good in front of, you know, I just want to feel good about myself, or is it just I want to look good to people? And understanding that tick and really like being sort of at peace with that.
Being
with
honest
that.
With yourself is the issue.
Yes.
Yeah, well, so what would you do if nobody was looking? You know, I have to ask myself like the desert island question. Like every time I'm making decisions, I always bring it back to like cars. Like I don't care about cars at all. Like they're pieces of metal on four pieces of rubber. Yeah. Like, I'd find myself looking at a nice car going, oh, I'd look good in that car. You know, and I ask myself, well, if I was on a desert island and no one saw me with this, I'm like, would I buy this thing?
Exactly.
You know, and the answer is always no. I'm like, I would never do that.
Like, yeah, because some people are wired, like, some people enjoy actually driving that car.
Yes. One of my best mates is the same. He loves cars. We always joke that, and I put this in the new book, I'm like, he's like, I'd be driving around a desert island by myself in a Ferrari. And he's like, you'd be pulling like branches together doing pull-ups. He's like, I'd be massively fat. He goes, if I was on that island by myself, because he hates working out.
And
it's like different things, false consensus bias. Like I always assumed that everybody thought the same as me. Yeah. It's not. Like people think value different things.
Sure.
And just getting very clear on what you value, and you know, as you said, not following things because it's a trend at the minute. You know, I think that if you can do that, it's going to set you up straight away on level footing. It's like, it doesn't make it any easier, but it does make it probably, it makes it easier to handle it when the difficult times do come. I think that's the difference, as opposed to, you know, starting on the wrong foot because you're doing it because you want this person to see you with the car, or this person to see that you've entrepreneurship on your label, on your Instagram, or whatever. I think that's important to recognize up front.
And how much do you think social media plays a role there?
To be honest, I think it's massive. Like I had to, this is something I really struggled with myself, because comparison syndrome, like, you know, Theodore Roosevelt's quote, comparison is the thief of joy. Like I literally had that like photocopied and stamped up on my wardrobe wall to remind myself, because there was a time when, you know, you remember like 20 years ago, you'd compare yourself against the people in your neighborhood, in your town, in your village.
Yeah.
And now you can do it with anybody. You know, you can look at the super attractive guy or super attractive girl on Instagram, the people with the perfect relationship, or the business that is looks like it's doing amazingly well. And instantly you're like, why isn't my business doing that well? Yeah. And
but you don't know anything about them apart from the highlight reel.
Highlight reel.
Because at least the people in your town, you also knew the shit and the good stuff.
Yeah, but you don't have that now.
There's no context. It's just, wow, that just looks perfect. And I'm thinking about all the things that I'm not when I see that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you see that.
You have no context when you see a photo.
There's no context. And that can really spiral people. And I think we see that. But I think from our perspective, the social conversation comes around to, you know, how is it being used? Because it's very much a power for good as well. We know, we've all experienced real positivity through social, connecting with people, learning from people that we'd never have learned from
and
before.
And spreading value as well. And I feel like, you know, whenever you understand your truth and you've identified that this is what I'm passionate about, and I'm going to be doing it whether there's one person listening to me or whether there's 1 million people listening to me. And I feel like it's, to me personally, it's similar to when I started playing music and, you know, we're trying to like play a concert and there's like two people there.
Yeah.
And then to say, like, playing in front of 45,000 people.
And then getting to that point. So like, but it's that kind of journey, you know what I mean? And it's the journey of like, I'm doing it because there's a desire for you know, for the passion of expression, or for the passion of learning, or for the passion of teaching. And it's once you are identified with that sort of, you know, unique asset that you have within yourself, that's when like, I feel like, no matter how many hours you want to spend building your brand or researching, you'll feel like it's just,
well,
it's not work.
Like, what would you do for free?
Yeah,
that's the question that you need to answer, right? And 100%. Whether that be music, whether it be, know, building a business. I absolutely love what I do every day. And yes, okay, there's financial benefits off the back of it. But I didn't start a business because I wanted to try and make money. I started a business because I just, it's almost like it's in your head, without being flippant about it, it's almost like a game.
Nice.
Like you study and you get better at it. And then you try and apply some of that and you get better at this and you try and find your weaknesses, and you try and find your strengths, and you try and put it all together. And it's constantly, it's similar to, I used to play a lot of team sports and rugby for many years and trying to do as much as I could in that space. And it's so relatable, because you look at like your skill set in a team sports environment, like, right, I need to get better out of these two things, those three things I'm all right at. So I'm going to focus on these. I'm going to try and build and, you know, try and progress. And then you move into business and it's like, right, well, I'm not very good at these three things, but I'm pretty good at those two things. How do I build that skill set up? And then, okay, now we're building a team here. So right, if that person joins this team, they've got to be good at this. And all of a sudden you're building a structure. And then you know, every day you're waking up, you're like, I can keep working on this. I can make it better.
And it never ends. Sports end. Like you get to a certain level.
There you go.
Entrepreneurship, you can do it to the day you die. I think that's one of the beauties, if you love the process of it.
Yeah.
Like you're setting yourself up for success straight away, because you can consist. That's what it's one of the only things that jumps to mind that you could potentially do forever and you were going to be better at it, you know, in 40 years than you are today.
So true. And then you start to realize, okay, well, now we can actually have an impact on the community, on the world, on the people that work for us, and the people in other parts of the world. And then you start to, then it's a whole different ballgame. And then you just roll with it, and it does its own thing. Money or no money,
there's an impact on society as well.
There you go. Yeah. And then, as we get a little bit older and a little bit wiser, I'd like to think, that we start to think, okay, well, what does legacy look like? Why are we here? Why are we doing these things?
Yeah.
Why? What are we spending 8 to 10 hours a day doing? And what good is that for society? And then we can build on these things.
Yeah. And let's bring it back to mindset a little bit, because, you know, both of you guys have done some amazing and like, you know, extreme, I would say, challenges when it comes to running and ultramarathons and stuff like this. And from your experience, how do you see the crossroad between your mindset in the middle of a race, you know, at 100 kilometer mark or something, like when it's this like deep, dark pocket in your mind and something in parallel to that as well, like, you know, building your brand, writing the book, running the business. You know, we talk about this topic quite a bit, and I feel like there's huge similarities when it comes to the persistency, the amount of effort that you need to sort of maintain, and of course, like, that sort of drive that you have. But like, if we were to break it down into technical, like, takeaways from your training, your mindset to leverage the consistency and to leverage that sort of strength when it comes to running the business and building your brand.
Well, I'll take this first, just because I'm going to give you props on this, because I'll never forget the first time I met Tom. It was in 2017 at the Tony Robbins Business Mastery in Amsterdam. And I remember you telling me about ultramarathons and telling me about Marathon de Sahara, the 6 back-to-back marathons in the Sahara. And I remember thinking, this thing is absolutely nuts. You were like, people are hooked up to IVs in the desert. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I missed that whole next talk because I was like on Google.
You came back to me after the next break. You were like, dude, he'd been through Instagram. He'd been through everything. He's like, this is amazing.
I was like, this is amazing. And it was Tom that planted that seed for me. I wouldn't be in the world of ultra at all if it wasn't for Tom.
Like, take us through, what have you done since?
So I've done that. I've done a couple of ultras around the Arctic in February.
Crazy.
Yeah, that was mental.
Is that 250?
230. 230, probably closer to 250, because I got lost twice.
Across the Arctic
Circle line, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was...
How long did that take you?
5 days. Yeah,
that was... Temperatures?
-38 was the coldest it got.
Bloody
yeah, God. -38 was,
can you imagine?
Was pretty insane, extreme. Man. Like, that was one of those, I'll never forget.
How's your mindset then?
It wasn't too bad, because you have to... The thing is with the Arctic, you know in the Sahara, when you're running through the Sahara, there's times you can, for everyone, you know, you're running through the Sahara.
For everybody that's,
for everyone
feels a little bit,
paint the picture. When you're running through the Sahara, you can kind of switch your mind off. It's similar to like running on a treadmill.
Yeah.
In the Arctic, you can't, because there's too many things that can go wrong. You know, you've got the constant risk of hyperthermia, the risk of frostbite if you slow down.
Stuff,
so you have to be on it the whole time. So you can't switch off.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that happened to me on the Arctic, like, I tore my Achilles 86 kilometers from the end. And that was brutal pain. Like, we did a podcast a couple of weeks before, and you were telling me about your knee.
Yeah.
And I remember just repeating your words, like, the pain will go away, the pain will go away. At some stage, you'll be back home on a couch. Like, and I was hobbling. Like, I hobbled the last 86 kilometers.
Because they wanted to pull you out of that.
they wanted to pull me out of it. The medical team were trying to pull me out, and I was like, no. Yeah. I was like, you're in that place and in that zone at the time.
I'm not coming back.
I was like, I was like, no. I'm like, unless you think I'm going to die. I was like, I'm going
to
keep going.
But let me ask you this here, because I mean, like, for everybody and for myself listening to this, I'm like, that's fucking crazy. You know, like, why? You know, and really, the question here is why? What, like, what is that thing that's going to keep you going through all of that pain? And I said, like, you've probably booked a flight, went to the Arctic, cool. But like,
it's more than that. Obviously,
yeah. But like, why? Yeah. Why?
Well, like, there's a few things. Like, for me, I was very lucky in the sense of, you know, the failure is feedback. Like, I talked to you about the Barcelona Ultramarathon I did a few months before, and I timed out of that race. It was only 60 or 70 kilometers or something, and I timed out of the race and missed it. And I went back home, togged in, and I'm like, oh, I was so angry at myself. I'm like, because I probably could have made the cutoff time if I pushed it, you know, and I chucked it in. I was like, no, this is I'm not enjoying this. This is crap. This is a training run. Yeah. And I remember sitting and I'm like, that hurt for about a week. Mm. I remember being like, why did you, why? I was like, maybe you would have timed out. I was like, why didn't you go back and actually just keep going? Like, and instead of being like, no, I'm not enjoying this, and quit. And I remember thinking, that's how I felt for a week. Yeah. And that wasn't even a goal. That was a training run. I was like, I've been training for the Arctic for, you know, 6, 7, 8 months. I'm like, this is the end goal. I'm like, if I quit now, I'm like, that's not going away. You know, you told me that, like, the pain will go away. Like, at some stage, you're going to be sitting back in on your couch watching, you know, Wales super play powerful. Ireland in the rugby, and you're going to be super comfortable, and you're not going to be in minus 38 degrees with a torn Achilles. Yeah. I'm like, but you can either come home having finished it, or you can come home having tapped out. I just made the decision not to.
It sounds like that mindset of getting the job done, right?
Yeah.
And it's pretty amazing to think about. I mean, you talked about the failure being a feedback loop, and then it kind of, I'm going to challenge this a little bit, right? It kind of sounds like you put your mindset in a place so that you don't want to accept failure.
You know what I mean? I can't give myself a plan B because I'll take a plan B. Yeah, I spoke earlier, like, my mindset isn't, you know, I look at the likes of Tom, and that's why I love having conversations. I talk to you, I talk to Marcus, and I'm like, oh my God, like, their mindset. I'm like, I take so much from our conversations, and where I have to take what they have and adopt it and apply it, because I'm not saying it comes naturally to you. I don't want to take liberties with that. Man. Yeah, but for me, if I give myself a plan B, I'll take plan B because I've done it for so long. My mindset, a lot of it has been built. You know, I'm not naturally strong with that. I would naturally have a tendency to give up on things when it gets difficult. Yeah. And I can't, like, if I go to the Arctic, it was the same as Sahara. I couldn't give myself a plan B because I will take plan B. It has to be commit to plan A unless there's a risk of death. Like, that's it. You know, I'm not stupid either. I've got a daughter at home. You know, I've got a family. Like, I'm not going to put my life on the line. Someone's like, look, you are going to die if you continue. But up to that point, I'm like, cool. If I can't walk for 3 months, fine. I was like, I'll walk in four. Like, and that was my philosophy when I came back. And I think anyone can build that. It's just, it's a gradual step-by-step process. And, like, listening to the Tom Ottens of the world. Like,
so I don't know about that. But look, it's what you're showing there is brutal self-awareness. You know that if you have that plan B, you'll take that plan B. And look, let's be honest, like, you have to unlearn a lot of things before you can really learn the lessons that you want to abide by in terms of life, right? So we all have to go through that unlearning process, because I think I'll take my journey as an example. You know, over the years, before you decide to get into this space of really understanding, okay, what do you want out of life, and goal setting, and what does that entail, and going back to your point earlier about, no, what's the link between entrepreneurship and being an athlete, for example, you know, discipline, relentlessness, not giving up, courage in certain areas, chasing uncomfortable situations so that you grow. All these things are very applicable to an athlete and also in business. And I think when you choose to go through that process, you have to unlearn a lot of things. You have to be forgiving with yourself, but you also need to become very, very self-aware. And are you saying that, saying, like, if I have a plan B, I'll take it, so I just refuse to give myself a plan B, is you knowing your mind very well. And I think everybody has to go through that journey of really understanding, how do I operate in a difficult situation? Now, you can't tell until you put yourself in a difficult situation.
And test the limits.
So one of the things about, you know, going back to your question, why would you do these things? Why would you go and put yourself in the Arctic at minus 38 degrees and risk of hypothermia and all this crazy shit when you don't need to? You can sit at home. You learn so much about yourself. You learn so much about what you're capable of, and it also it's your how do I explain your level of tolerance for difficult situations is constantly expanded by putting yourself in these difficult situations. Mm. So when you then come back into, let's call it the real world, and you start to deal with all these different scenarios, you have a much larger capacity for dealing with stressful situations. Through, yeah. So for me, it's running a business where I could have 5, 6, 10 people, as you very well know. You're the same in terms of coming in and like screaming and shouting about different things, not physically, but they're coming in. There's four fires to deal with.
Yeah.
Now, me of 5, 6, 7 years ago would have
freaked out,
put my hands up, go, I don't even know where to start here. Like, this is just too much. I'm overwhelmed. Yeah. But now, over time, putting myself in difficult situations, dealing with stressful situations, working on the mindset. I mean, it doesn't necessarily need running ultras to do that. You've done that in very different ways, but you've really worked on yourself as well.
But nothing on the level.
It's relative, though. It's 100% relative.
The work you've done is as effective as some of the stuff that we've done. We've just chosen a different.
I still love to test myself a bit.
but honestly, everybody should. But you increase your ability to tolerate stressful situations, and you see the power when you come back from one of these events. You're like, shit. I'm able to do A, B, and C. Mm. Like, you really feel a change in yourself. You become more self-confident. Mm. You become that higher tolerance of stress. The point to why do you push yourself to breaking point and not stop is because there is nothing worse than putting all your eggs in that basket of saying, I'm going to do this. I'm going to dedicate 6 months of my life, all the time away from family, time away from friends. Thursday nights you didn't go out because 5 a.m. you got to run. All of that time, you're constantly reinforcing this thought process of, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. This is me. Then it becomes your identity. Then it becomes who you are. You know, it's a badge on your chest. This is what I want. No, this is who I am. And now all of a sudden, if you pull out of that,
you're dropping the bag.
Yeah, you're dropping, but for yourself as much as anyone else. So there's two sides to it. Firstly, it's like, when you go through a long-term process, 5, 6, 7 months to go and run an ultra, you've put yourself in a position, you've become that person, you become that athlete. And if you then let yourself down, there's nothing more savage than when you're sat at home on that sofa and you sit there and your mates are asking, what went wrong and stuff like that. And whether it's the external of your friends asking or you just sat there on your own, you're like, I could have kept going. I could have kept pushing that.
Yeah.
That is savage, and none of us want that. So that's why when he's there, I know it's not because you've paid for a ticket and you don't want to come back. It's just because I ain't going to sit at home thinking about, I could have actually finished this when I didn't. And I've got to face my mum. I've got to face my daughter when she says, what happened over there? Why didn't you finish? And you're like, inside, if you could have finished and you have to answer the question, where are you then? So it's an interesting process.
So honestly, it's an amazing takeaway. It's so inspiring to hear you guys talk about these journeys because, you know, like you said, the breaking point for a lot of us, like let's say the regular listeners and people in general, is could be in different ways. And as long as you identify where is that breaking point and try to leverage that sort of push and challenge yourself. You know, it could be that your breaking point is running 5K or 10K,
and
it's those small steps that you kind of keep pushing yourself to become better and better each day, each week, each year. And like you said earlier, it's never going to be this like very steep development. Overnight you're going to basically be able to run 100 kilometers, but it's over time, and it's over time this like a bit of extra increase in endurance, increase in self-understanding, increase in your mindset as well, and you strengthen your mindset. I think that's super important.
Couldn't agree with you more.
I think when you, one of the things about running, because me and you have different philosophies on running, because I hate running.
You still say that, I've done a lot of running.
I still hate it. Like, we fall on very different ends of the spectrum. Like, I laugh. I always use Tom as an example. He's like, I'm going to run. This is my downtime. This is my release. And I'm like, I hate it. Like, it never gets any better because I'm not built to run. I don't enjoy it. Like, I ran 25 kilometers on Monday and I hated every second of the 25 kilometers. But you build up a massive mental toughness from doing that.
Yeah.
And that's relative to people. You know, the reason I just bring that up is because running's a great example of that. Some people have it with the gym, working out, getting up early, whatever it is.
Everyone hates something.
But it's like, lean into that a little bit every day. Sure. You know, it's the old adage, get comfortable being uncomfortable. Like, if you can do that consistently, it makes things a lot easier in everyday life. Like, you know, get up early in the morning and run. It's why I do it, because I don't like either of those things. But it makes the rest of the day significantly easier.
Yeah.
You know, you just get better. As you said, one of my favorite lines I've stolen, but I always quote it back to you, like, separating real problems from perceived problems. You know, if you can condition your mind to be a little bit stronger every day by doing something you don't want to do because you know it's going to make you better, you get better at separating perceived problems, which are things that you could potentially fix, versus real problems. Something's happened to my daughter. Something's happened to my mom. Like, they're real problems. Like, if you, you know, if there's something you can do about the issue right now, you don't really have a problem. You have an inconvenience, you know. But a real problem is different. And I think if you can build up a bit of mental strength, regardless of what that is for you, 1 kilometer run every day, a 2 kilometer run, getting up at half an hour earlier, doing that makes you better at that. And as an entrepreneur, I think it's vital, because I think if you,
apply that to
that skill set of being able to separate real problems from perceived problems, I think that, like, I remember, as soon as you said that on the podcast, I like imprinted it on my brain. I'm like, that's brilliant. And I think it's really, really helpful philosophy for people to adopt, just help with any area of their business, either starting or people that have been on their journey for a long time.
Yeah, very much so. So, I mean, look, if you go, have a look at what David Goggins puts out as well. I mean, some great.
The guy's a machine now.
The guy's he's another level.
Different gravy, completely.
He's absolutely cooked. But you know, anyone that doesn't know about David Goggins, certainly
check out the book.
Go Google his name. Check out his book.
Yeah.
But he talks a lot about that, specifically around just doing stuff that you really don't like to do, because it's just building up that mental toughness consistently. And putting a lot of people are afraid of uncomfortable situations, so they avoid them, and then they wonder why they're not, let's say, mentally tough like the people that they look up to. It's because you keep avoiding the things you don't want to do, whereas the people that are, let's say, quote unquote, mentally tough, that these particular people are reading books on or looking up to, that they're doing the exact opposite, as you said, leaning into those uncomfortable situations so that they get slowly better. A lot of people hate public speaking. I was petrified of public speaking. Even now, I get up, I'm like, it's still flustered when I first get up, and then calm down and get into it. But when I was in school, if I ever had to put my hand up, I wouldn't put my hand up in class to talk, because it just was petrified of just being on, like, on a stage or public speaking or anything like that. But then over time, it's like bit by bit, and you'll only ever get there by taking every opportunity and saying, yep, I'll do that talk. Yep, nice. I'll stand up in front of the class. Yep, I'll do that. And you hate it every time before you walk on, you're like, why? Why? What? Like, I'll go and do a talk at a school. And even a bunch of, like, 100 school kids, I'm standing there, I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? Yeah. Like, I don't need to be here. Like, it's like, there's no benefit for me. So then you just get into the selfish mindset, and then you try and pull yourself out of it, and you're like, no, you're not here for you. You're here for them. You've got a story to tell. It's going to benefit these kids if one person listens and they change their mind. You know, get out of that headspace. And then once you're up there, you're like, you walk off and you feel $1 million, and the kids are saying thanks, and you feel amazing. But you only get there by putting yourself in uncomfortable situations. And almost everyone I speak to in public speaking, 90% of them have followed a similar journey of hating it through to slowly being more comfortable, through to actually, you know, I'm okay at this, and I feel like I've got a lot of value to add to whoever wants to listen, so therefore kind of moving into that space. But people will still sit back and say, I'm petrified and I won't do it.
I agree 100%. And I think, you know, as soon as we are more comfortable getting outside of our comfort zones, and as soon as we're more comfortable leaning into that fear of stuff, even if you want to try it for the very first time, you know, life begins at the other side of fear as well. Yeah. And I think that's going to be a really cool takeaway for all of our listeners to kind of, like, wrap up our super inspiring talk with both of you guys.
Cool. Brian, look, thanks a lot for coming in, mate. It's great to have you back in Dubai for the second time.
Yeah.
I still need to get to Ireland. We're going to do one of those races.
I have a room saved for you. It's fine. You got it covered in the countryside.
One of the races we've been talking about at some point.
Check out the new book as well when it's out on 5th of December, right?
5th of December, awesome. Awesome. Okay. Thanks so much. You're legends. Thanks so much.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah. Cheers, guys. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. I'm not sure who's on the show yet, but the lovely Jen will tell us soon. It's booked. Yeah, it is booked. Okay, good. Cool.
Surprise guest.
Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week.